Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, AMD strikes back. We got the AMD 2013 roadmap, the AMD Ultra Thin laptops, and the Radeon HD 7950 GPU, also from AMD. And oh yeah, updates on the 2012 Xbox, $25 to get your first Windows phone from Nokia, water cooling for beginners, and why we love Cat 6. Cat 6A, that is. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 155, recorded February 2nd, 2012. AMD strikes back. This episode of Twitch is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, normally hosted by myself, Patrick Norton, and a man named Ryan Trout, who is unfortunately off at a dinner with AMD, hopefully actually at a dinner with AMD and not being smuggled off to a giant hole in the desert. I'm making humor, not mocking AMD. Please don't do anything nasty to their stock prices. This is fun, at least where I'm concerned. So since I'm making awkward jokes and causing terror in the chat room, I should probably welcome our guest tonight, Mr. Robert Herron, normally my co-host on Techzilla. And I will say, I'm going to open this up to the chat room. Anybody out there wants to fire us out a tweet? If you got an HETV question, fire it out for Mr. Herron, and we will try to get it answered for you when we get to the viewer questions at the second part of the show.
Awesome.
This Week in Computer Hardware is mostly about the computer hardware. We occasionally do some tablet or phone news, but mostly, and occasionally some HETV news, but mostly we're about computer hardware. We're going to start out with some news today, as always. Follow up with your tech questions after our commercial break. And we should probably say, yeah, Ryan, by the way, again, at a dinner with AMD this evening, he sent his regrets. And interesting week. Before we get into a big chunk of AMD news, because it was kind of like AMD's financial week, give a shout out to AMD, Kyle, and the whole Hard OCP crew, who have proved for $55,000 you can get geeks to do push-ups. If you check out on PCPer.com, they had a rep down there at the party. Quote, while we at PC Perspective wait for QuakeCon before heading to Texas, Hard OCP hosts the AMD Game Experience in Dallas during January. This is the third year in a row they're giving gamers the chance to experience the newest in games and gaming peripherals, and it must have been a good one since they not only managed to recover enough to post the pictures today. Basically, it took them like 2 days for everybody to get out from under the furniture and post these $55,000 worth of prizes to give out, and that makes it possible to get gamers to do push-ups. So
that just looks like an awesome time though for the folks in Texas who can make it to that event. It's just that's one of those few events. That and QuakeCon, I think, are the two big ones I've been meaning to drag my butt to the big state to check out. And that's it sounds like a great time though for people into PC gaming and LAN parties.
So if you're in Texas and you missed it, I'm sorry. It sounds like it was pretty freaking awesome. AMD basically starting their financials, and if you take a look at AMD processor and GPU roadmaps have been released through 2013, and kind of like the near future, not the far future, but you're taking a look at Northern Ireland's Llanos, Brazos. Northern Ireland's for discrete graphics turns into the Southern Islands in late 2012, Trinity on the performance APUs, and it starts getting interesting as you start scrolling down to the client and graphics roadmap. Sea Islands 2013 is going to be a new GPU architecture, and Tamash, the second generation ultra low power APU. Brazos gets followed up by Kabini, or I should say Brazos 2.0 gets followed up by Kabini. And for performance APUs, Kaveri, the third generation APU with Steamroller cores. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch kind of what happens as we're looking at the sort of evolution of the APU and how it's doing on performance. Have you considered buying an AMD processor anytime recently, Mr. Herron?
Not per se, but I have been looking. Actually, when I was looking at new home theater boxes, I was considering some of their smaller platform architecture, just because they have ATI graphics, or now AMD graphics, and I find that their options and features in that chipset tend to be better for home theater than I get with anybody else. In particular, I pointed at Intel and their integrated graphics, which have some shortcomings to say the least when it comes to just doing good home theater output So if I could have a small low power system with enough oomph to do 1080p and to have an AMD graphics core in it, that's exactly what I'm kind of looking for.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. Going to like the what they call like the essential category, the Kabini APU, which is 2 to 4 Jaguar CPU cores, and graphics core next. At the top of the line, 4 to 8 pile driver CPU cores at the Vishera. Hopefully I'm saying that right, at the high end. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what they're doing with the next generation of the high-end processors and what the performance looks like that. Quote of further interest is that we see no mention of Steamroller on the CPU, only the desktop side. Could this be a hint that AMD will move away from producing desktop parts that do not feature an APU? And I'm going to guess the answer to that one is yes. I think they're going to be all APU all the time.
There you go.
So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Have you considered buying an Ultrabook, Mr. Heron?
I want a thin and light notebook, that's for sure. And I know for sure that my next notebook will not have an optical drive in it. I really just don't need it. I'm like, why am I buying these notebooks with optical drives in them when I use it maybe once or twice ever through the life of the product?
I actually got read the Riot Act about that recently. Somebody's like, how can you call that a real computer, that MacBook Air? Not only is it OS X, but there's no DVD drive. And I'm just like,
yeah. Also, because I need essentially just one external slimline Blu-ray drive
right.
to handle any if I need to load up a piece of software off a disk, but most of my software I'm either downloading or streaming, and for video content it's the same way. I either have compressed files of what I'm watching. I very rarely throw in a DVD movie. A Blu-ray movie would be nice, but on a small notebook screen I really don't care so much about having all that detail,
right?
More than, unless I'm outputting that to something else, but that's a whole nother issue. But as long as I can get HDMI output too, because I do use my notebook quite a bit as a source device when I do display right. testing. So, but what are you thinking about in terms of the ultralights?
On our AMD theme for today, AMD showed off an 18mm thin reference ultra thin notebook based on Trinity. Woo!
Okay.
Yeah, basically it was the AMD Financial Analyst Day in Sunnyvale. Lisa Su is who you're looking at right there. The Senior Vice President and General Manager Global Business Units showed off a reference design from Compal. Basically, it's an ultra-thin, 18mm ultra-thin notebook that is, guess what? Not an ultrabook because it doesn't have an Intel processor. It's going to be a Trinity APU. And there's some pretty big claims going on with that one. Over 50% better graphics performance than the competition, at least measured against the competition that's available right now, I would assume. And AMD is claiming better battery life than competitive platforms. Or they're projecting, I should say, better battery life. So
it sounds good on paper, I guess. But when they say 50% greater or GPU power too, are they talking about going from say like 6 frames a second to 8 or something?
Well.
or 9, which would be It's all kind of relative until we see the real numbers and get our hands on the hardware.
Yeah, that's always a big problem, you know.
But you mentioned though the MacBook Air, and I have to say that design I think has inspired every company to go shoot for the moon in terms of the Samsungs of the world and everyone else are designing new platforms.
Did the MacBook Air inspire that, or did Intel decide they wanted everybody else to do a MacBook Air like thin and light platform and create an entire marketing program designed to push it?
Steel cases too, or alloy cases in general. Anything with metal in it just seems to feel better than plastic too. So
depends on the plastic, but you know.
Good point.
I think it's going to be a while before anybody catches up to what Apple's doing in terms of construction, where they basically have thousands of hundreds of CNC mills running 24 hours a day, nibbling out the it's just crazy the fact they're basically milling computer cases. Have you seen? Did you get a chance to get hands-on? We're hoping to get one in for eval on Techzilla, but the new 13-inch ultralight from Dell.
Ooh, no, I saw a picture of it though, and it looks delicious.
It's such a solid feeling, The XPS 13 Ultrabook. Actually, do they have pricing out on that? I know it's coming soon. Quote.
I used to roll with the Dell book a long time ago, back in the corporate days, and it generally had a good repair policy on it. That's all I have to say. And I haven't used their hardware in a while, although I did deal with one of their desktops recently, and it was it looked pretty decent. So I'd be curious to see what their latest mobile hardware, though, looks like.
It's, It's funny. They did actually a carbon fiber base. And sorry, I'm putting a link in here for Chad so you can see it. But basically, it's like the underside is carbon. Whoops. How did you do that? It's aluminum top, carbon fiber on the underside. And it actually feels shockingly sort of heavy and solid. I was actually pleasantly surprised with how good it felt in hand. I'll be really curious to see what the keyboard ends feeling up in the production version. But the pricing should be good, which is always a big plus.
That's the right size notebook right there.
Yeah.
Nice and thin, easy to transport. give me at least a 120 gig SSD in one of those or larger, 8 gigs RAM.
And the Dell has Gorilla Glass.
Yay. Hey, you know what? That's a good thing.
Oh, this extra
tough.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, just extra tough glass always helps. I mean, of the parts I've replaced on Dell notebooks, I think I've gone through at least two or three screens on the last notebook I was at. So,
was that Dell's fault or yours?
No, it was definitely my fault. And I also discovered better transport as far as secure backpacks and padded backpacks and other things to keep your gear a little more safe than just hand holding it at least. So.
It's amazing how they bounce when you drop them down a flight of stairs. Yeah,
apparently the LCD cracking does absorb quite a bit of energy in the fall. So, but it's game over at that point.
It reduces usability considerably.
Little bit.
XPS 13, I guess, $999 in February. So, AMD Radeon HD 7950 3GB graphics card review. They're showing up everywhere.
Nice.
You know, it's like an HD 7970. But a little bit less. I mean,
3 gigs. I can't believe that's actually needed nowadays. That's I'm surprised. The cards themselves, as scenes are being drawn in most modern games, are doing their own internal optimizations, and the way the drivers are built nowadays, right, too. They optimize per title. And the card will realize, hey, I have like 1.2 gigs or 3 gigs of RAM on board and adjust accordingly. But it's nice to see that these 3 gig cards are actually being taken advantage of, especially if you're gaming at high resolutions, like beyond 1080p, even multi-headed gaming. If you're doing, say three displays at 4K plus resolution in some cases, but where you need that.
It's an interesting part. You take a look at it. Basically, so this is the step below. 7970 is the top of the line from AMD. 7950 is the next step down. Quote, the truth is that the new AMD Radeon HD 7950 3-gig card is faster than the GeForce GTX 580 from NVIDIA, even at its default reference clock speeds of 800 megahertz. That's going to get worse, obviously, as AMD partners start overclocking them to 900 megahertz. In Battlefield 3, Skyrim, and Dirt 3, the performance of both these cards were pretty much in line with each other at all resolutions we tested. You'd be hard-pressed to tell which one was running any faster than the other. In Batman Arkham City, we saw an average of a 5% lead for the HD 7950. In Metro 2033, a 16% lead. Deus Ex Human Revolution as high as 21%. So the 7950 is definitely turning a whole lot of pixels over. And then comparing it to the 7970, the Tahiti GPU was, quote, 10 to 25% faster depending on the benchmark. The largest gap was seen in our Battlefield 3 testing, where the two cards had as much of a 25% performance difference at the highest resolution, and the smallest gap was found in Batman, where only 10% separated them. So,
sweet.
Yeah.
They also mentioned in that article, too, the 7950, they were taking it to, what did they say, 1,050 megahertz without any voltage tweaks either.
Exactly.
Which is pretty impressive. So that's one benefit of having the smaller package, the smaller traces on the chip itself, so they can, keep it cooler and get these good speeds out of it. It'd be interesting to see. Considering me and my friend, we were putting together his new gaming box, we just threw down the cash on about a month now, on a 580, GTX 580. So seeing this, it's kind of like, oh.
Well, does your friend have a 30-inch monitor? Does your friend want to game across three monitors?
No.
Your friend,
he's gaming on one 24-inch 12x or 19x12 monitor.
You don't need to spend the extra. Well, yeah. You probably did spend the extra, but you don't need a 7970 unless you're running a 30-inch panel with the giant resolution or multiple panels.
You'd be surprised though if you're just one of those people that if you have like a 19 or a monitor that's running say a 19x12 or higher. That extra performance, if you're one of those people who just wants the ultimate fidelity out of all the latest games, at least until they put a few patches in them to make them a little better. But if you're going to be playing on ultimate settings or ultra settings on games like Battlefield 3 or Not so much Skyrim. Skyrim's really more CPU dependent, although it helps to have a good graphics card if you're going to play around with some of the advanced options for rendering. But if you are one of those gamers, high resolution, ultimate video quality, you really do need a card like this to, in order to pull it off. Otherwise, you swallow your pride and just set the settings to medium or lower the resolution to get the performance you need. It's, you know, I don't think any PC gamer is going to play with a slideshow, period. But well, but so it's really not. Different. It's different depending on if you're gaming multiplayer versus single player, too. I'm willing to pull it up, put up with a slight decrease in performance on single player. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to multiplayer, I'll turn settings down to ensure I'm getting liquid frame rates so I have a better chance of shooting those younger.
I was going to say, you turn the speed down so you can not die as fast.
Perfectly. I need that frame rate just so when I flick that mouse, I have a chance to take revenge on the person sneaking up behind me.
It's interesting. They also, one of the things that Ryan points out is the zero core power technology inside the Radeon HD 7970 and the 7950. It's pretty cool. Screens go, when the screens go into sleep mode, it'll actually drop the power consumption of the GPU down to a single watt. And the 7950 actually is consuming 50 watts less power than the Radeon HD 6970 2-gigabyte card. So the jump from 48 nanometer to 28 nanometer process apparently has gone spectacularly well. So Ifinity is still the only single GPU option for running multiple display gaming configurations. And it's interesting, Ryan thinks he may be able to do like a 5760 by 1080 configuration on a single card, which would be really sick.
That would be impressive. I don't know what games, though. Yeah. That's a lot of pixels to be pushing. That's over 4K resolution, I believe. No. Yeah. Close. That's still a tremendous amount of pixels.
Archon.
I'd like to see if we could get an output, though, for that full resolution, maybe into a 4K projector or something. I'm just thinking of ways to just drive a single display rather than multiple monitors at that kind of resolution, but I'll keep working on that.
Yeah, and Archon in the chat room says, any news in the 7990? Yes, it's coming. Any additional news beyond that, we will wait to see if Ryan hears anything at dinner tonight. But details have been leaked, but not a whole lot more than that. So taking a look at next story up on the pile. Yeah, it's a really good card for $449, the HD 7950. Putting Bulldozer to the proper use, how well does it serve? Over at the Enquirer, you can take a look at the performance of the Opteron 6274 as a server chip as opposed to the desktop benchmarks that have made the bulk of Bulldozer reviews on the web. It's interesting. Supermicro has assembled a server containing a dual-socket Opteron 6274. For a total of 32 cores, I want to run freaking Photoshop on this, and 64 gigs of error-correcting DDR3, 1333 megahertz RAM across 8 channels running on 64-bit Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1. While the machine was quite powerful, it still has difficulty keeping up with Intel. Its performance on Cinebench was about the same as provided by an X5680 Westmere Xeon, which is not Intel's best silicon. On the plus side, the scaling for multi-threaded applications was quite good, as one would hope with 32 cores. So if you're thinking about, it's the Enquirer article is actually a good read. It always over at theenquirer.net. But AMD Interlagos on Supermicro Workstation Review. And basically the question is Bulldozer better in a workstation than a desktop? And I think it depends on how many threads you can throw your application at or how many applications. Well, the more threads you need, the happier it'll be with Bulldozer. That is enough about AMD. Anybody want any more AMD?
Yes!
Duds Fry, $100 cheaper would be better. Of course.
Always.
Suxers. Apparently, that's my genius title. No new Xbox in 2012.
Thank goodness. I just bought my Xbox, my first one in 2011. So,
how many Xboxes have you had, Red Ring of Death, Mr. Heron?
None. Well, I've only owned the new one that's on the picture in the article page, actually. The brand new latest model has all the touch controls. And it's very, very quiet compared to the... I just have flashbacks to the very first launch product from the Xbox 360. And it was just... it was always loud and clunky, and at first it only had component video output, too, but all that has changed dramatically, and hence I finally jumped on board. That and all my friends bought Forza Motorsports, so we had to get on board so we could all race together, which is a ridiculous excuse just to buy the Xbox 360. But it also makes it tremendous and probably one of the most full-featured Windows Media Center extenders out there, too. But
did you buy a Kinect yet?
I got the bundle package that came with it, so... It's that is neat technology, and that'll be curious too. We've already seen a lot of TVs coming out for 2012 that are going to feature Kinect-like functionality built right in.
Right,
that's going to be one of those checkbox features for this year for the premium sets that we'll be seeing. Something that basically incorporates a field array microphone, some camera system for doing not only video but also measuring depth cues for 3D, so you can have more interactivity, be it for face recognition to voice control to gesture recognition as well. So it's going to be a neat year, and I honestly think everyone just saw that Kinect technology. It's like the light went on. It's like we can do something similar and have that there. But I'm not really bummed that there's not going to be a new Xbox at least this year. Give another year to work on getting the games right and really taking advantage of the extra performance. They're going to be shooting. I imagine that new console will be all 1080p gaming, 60 frames a second, hopefully, is what they're aiming at. Mm-hmm. That will really, I think, provide not only a good experience for 2D, but I'll be curious to see if they're going to incorporate or what they're going to incorporate as far as 3D goes into the next gen Xbox as well. Even though I'm sure, are there any games on the Xbox right now that support 3D? I'm not sure. I don't believe so, but I'm not the expert in that one.
At this point, it's kind of funny. The Tom's Hardware was talking to the Microsoft marketing director, Cedric Delmax. Where is it? Quote, Xbox 360 cycle is not at all finished. And he claimed that just to prove the point, if it was finished, we would have dropped the price going into the holiday season, which they didn't. I think it's going to be interesting to see how long they can hold on to this before they get whapped, by next generation Sony console, or just waiting too long and developers getting incredibly bored. Because PC gaming rules, man.
Xbox is on top of the world, though, as far as console gaming goes. I mean, the Xbox Live system for the community aspect of that console is its strongest suit, I think, at least compared to what Sony's been doing. Sony never really did much with their multiplayer and the online side, short of just independent game titles that supported multiplayer. Right. It's not at all like you see on Xbox, where, wow, you have your contact list, your IM, your video and voice communications. Sure, some of that's available on the PS3 as well, but the I know far more people who bought Xbox Live Gold accounts than I do similar accounts on the PlayStation system.
True dat.
Yeah.
Nokia Lumia 900 now available for pre-order at Microsoft's retail stores with a $25 down payment, says The Verge. Quote, we're still not sure when we'll see Nokia's Lumia 900. March is the general guess. But you can pre-order it now. $25 down to secure Nokia's new Windows Phone handset. And we will see, says The Verge, if the rumored March release and $99 price point or launch date actually hit. I'm actually really curious to see how that phone does. I'm curious to see if this is Microsoft's wedge back into the mobile phone market. I wait with bated breath.
Indeed.
After CES last year, when NVIDIA did their ARM announcement, Ryan and I were talking about how ARM is kind of the future, NVIDIA said. There are more ARM CPUs. Basically, the ARM CPUs are everywhere. They're taking over everything. Mobile platforms are the future for most people in most countries. And it's kind of interesting. ARM is almost kind of closing in on Intel, kind of. Quote, for total dollar revenue over 2011, the only company that can touch Intel's earning would be Apple. Okay. Apple, of course, buying a whole lot of Intel CPUs. But when you talk about percentage growth over the last year, ARM actually beat Intel's 21% growth, although not by much. So mobile continues to grow like a weed.
You need to find that one number in your PR doings that can give you an edge over the competition.
Well, you know.
So, hey, you know, having higher growth, it doesn't say anything for the number of parts shipped or, you know, x86 performance. Per watt, maybe. I'd like to see. it's always good to have competition, but man, Intel's not stupid, and they are a giant of a company. So.
Yeah, and just to put this into context, quote, revenue for the last quarter of 2011 was up by more than 20% to £137.8 million, or about $300 million. So they got a ways to go yet before they close in on Apple's $13 billion in profit in one quarter. Should we talk about the Asus Direct CU2 roundup?
Yes.
ZFS coming to OS 10.
Their brand new graphics cards?
Yeah.
Yes. I want them. Oh, these are the factory overclocked models that...
I like what the Josh Walrath wrote the review up on PC Per, and quote, "These are really nice cards," which is one of the nicest things I've heard in the summary of a roundup. But
I have the standard GTX 570 right. in my case right now, and I absolutely love it. It's just it's been a rock solid card. And I don't know if there's any mysterious magic that goes on when you put an Asus graphics uh-huh. card into an Asus motherboard, but it just feels faster. It's just something about it. It just seemed like to magically go boom. And I was just like, I was very happy. And although I'm not overclocking that, I am overclocking my CPU.
Well, the Asus, the DirectCU 2, basically Asus is responding to other cards that are doing, other card manufacturers that are doing more original designs. And the DirectCU is essentially that they're doing copper heat pipes that are connected directly to the CPU, which is, or the GPU, which is pretty much where you would want them. Quote, "These heat pipes are then distributed through two separate aluminum fin arrays, each with their own fans. So each card has either a dual slot or triple slot cooling solution with two 80 millimeter fans that dynamically adjust to the temperature of the chip."
That's one thing too. When I was cooking off my GTX 570 with a program like Furmark, it never went above about 75% on the fan right. speed, and it basically limits itself to around, I think it was about 80 degrees Celsius. So it did a really good job. I mean, and that's under a ridiculous load too. That's not a typical gaming yeah. load at all.
Well, these are funny because like the other thing they did is they upgraded the caps and put on higher quality chokes. And basically the idea was they were going to upgrade most of the electrical components on the card to allow, basically, they're making it overclocking friendly by you know, keeping you from A, melting the card, and keeping you from yep. B, torching the card.
So the whole key is being able to push the voltages high enough to where it becomes stable at yeah. extreme overclocks. And to do that, yeah, everything has to be just right.
So, interesting stuff. If you have been thinking about...
I like it.
Yeah, if you've been thinking about buying a new card and you're leaning on the NVIDIA side of things, that is definitely one worth checking out.
And I have that brand too, just Asus's graphics cards overall. I just have had very few problems, if any, that I can recall, considering I've had dramatic failures from some other companies. And it was just anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
For what it's worth.
Yeah. The ENT or the EN GTX 50 or 570, good balance between the high end and the lower 560, and extremely overclocking friendly, says Josh up at PCPer.com. Who wants big storage?
Me. I want affordable hard drives again one of these days.
We can dream.
Yes, we can.
It's kind of funny. I've got like 12 terabytes of hard drive. I'm in the process of possibly migrating them to a new box. And it's interesting because ZFS has been out on FreeNAS for a while. And now ZFS, the file system that was kind of launched by Sun, originally, there was a whole group inside of Apple that was working to bring that to OS X. And up on MacRumors.com, they're talking about basically ZFS coming to OS X, courtesy of Apple's former chief ZFS architect. Don Brady, who worked for an engineer at Apple for like 20 years, who helped bring HFS Plus to OS X, was working on Apple's internal ZFS team. From 2006 till it was disbanded in 2009. In case you're wondering why you should care about this, ZFS brings a 128-bit structure to address large file and volume sizes and really cool data management features and like copy and write technology to preserve the file system structure. It's everything you want underlying your NAS, your secure NAS storage. So Zevo is a company that's going to be bringing a Silver Edition. So it's bringing ZFS to OS X. And I am kind of really curious to see what that's like, because this could be kind of the ultimate improvement for Time Machine. So
is this swapping out the file system in OS X for another file system?
I believe so.
Okay. Is that something you really want to play with outside of, you know, the OS writer or the author? I don't know. It just seems like that's odd. You'd want to swap it out like that. But
that's an interesting thought. Now you've got me wondering. Well, Mac OS X is an impressive plugin architecture. I'm up at the tenscompliment.com website. By the way, there is an open source group bringing ZFS to OS X before anybody starts typing it into the chat room. But macOS 10 has a plug-in architecture that allows different storage technologies to be easily added into the operating system. And let me copy this into the show notes so Chad can bring it to everyone, so I'm not just talking in a vacuum. This is how we cut and paste on Twitch this week in computer hardware. So the idea is the majority of file system technologies in use in macOS 10 were developed outside of Apple, yet they seamlessly plug in to give users more options for data interchange.
Okay.
So, you know, basically NFS, SMB, MS-DOS, NTFS, UFS, CFS, ISO 9660, which is CD-ROM. So what Zevo does is allow you to plug in ZFS in between basically the macOS 10 and the hard drive.
Good
That's
deal.
Really interesting.
So if you want incredible amounts of storage, some better basically better security for your data too. Yeah.
So basically you're not going to use a dedicated unused internal or external hard disk. So I'm going to be checking this out. We're going to try to do something on this on Techzilla on Monday if I can get it to run without hurting myself. But the silver edition, silver edition is available now. And then gold and platinum are coming later in 2012. Interesting. Well, before I put everyone to sleep, yeah. In case you're not asleep in the chat room, Anantech has a really awesome article on Rosewill's RK9000 mechanical keyboard. You know who Rosewill is, by the way? Are you familiar with Rosewill? Rosewill is basically Newegg's house brand for computer parts. And they're doing the RK9000 is a $99 mechanical switch keyboard that they've actually I had no idea they were doing a decent high-end keyboard. But if you're looking for better typing, this might be one worth considering. It's actually not that expensive. I would almost go to say it is cheap for a mechanical switch keyboard, especially if you type a lot.
Yeah, may I suggest you warn your coworkers if you're actually going to bring one of these into the office. There is nothing more annoying than say a person who can do about 70 to 90 words a minute slamming away on one of these.
Well,
cough, Jim Lauterbach, cough.
This is an ALM switch. The Cherry switches, I don't think, are quite this loud. I'm tempted to actually order one.
And the people who love these keyboards, they want them as loud as possibly they can possibly be. But if you work at home alone, go for it. It's awesome. It's an awesome keyboard.
I kept two keyboards at the old house. Now I'm moving all the computing stuff out to a garage, so it's not an issue. But I used the Alps keyboard, and then when my wife was sleeping, I would plug in the cheap mechanical membrane or the cheap plastic membrane keyboard so I wouldn't wake her up from my typing. Nothing upsets a spouse like being woken up at typing. A flurry of benchmark typing at 3 in the morning.
Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun. Take a moment to thank our sponsors at Netflix. This episode of This Week in Computer Hardware is brought to you by Netflix. Netflix streams, in case you didn't know, thousands of television episodes and movies directly to you instantly anywhere you are. If you have a connection to the internet, you don't have to leave the couch. If you can press a button, if you can operate your iPhone, your iPad, your Android device, you know, the list could go on. There are a lot of easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and television shows on Netflix, on your Mac, on your PC, on your iPad. iPad app's really solid. Inside your iPhone, mini Android phones, your Xbox 360, PS3, Nintendo Wii. If your HDTV has Netflix support built in, and most of the new ones do, most of the new Blu-ray players have Netflix built in. And it's really cool because you can start watching, you know, there's some stuff I don't want to share with my 4-year-old. I can watch it on my iPhone. And then when he goes to sleep, I can walk into the living room and fire up the Apple TV or the Boxy Box and actually keep watching the movie exactly from where I left off. So if you like to stop and start, it's kind of nice to know you can be back exactly where you were without having to fast forward and rewind and stuff. It's nice. Apple TV, of course, Roku boxes. You don't have to be a gamer to get Netflix. And you can watch movies and TV shows anytime, anywhere for one low monthly fee, which means if my son decides to watch 4 episodes of Jab's Big Music Show 32 times in 30 days, I don't end up paying a small fortune because there's one flat low fee, unless you're new to Netflix, in which case we got something cool for you, a 30-day free trial. Go to netflix.com/twit. And do us a favor. If you go to netflix.com/twit, you'll be ensuring that Netflix knows that we sent you, and we'll get some credit for that. We want to thank Netflix for their continued support of Twitch, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for your support.
Netflix. Heck yeah.
Twitch at twit.tv is the email address. It's a great way to reach us. Right now, though, Mr. Robert Heron is with us. We're going to open up some email questions in a second. I'm going to open this one up to the chat room. Anybody out there in the chat room have an HDTV question for Mr. Heron? Perhaps something on the Blu-ray player?
Dude, I'm telling you,
the home theater extender.
The craziest thing this week was that VHS deck I found for a client that had a combo VHS DVD recorder. This person has a large VHS collection they refused to get rid of, but we needed HDMI output, and we found this one refurbished Magnavox product that actually would do both the DVD and the VHS output through the one HDMI output. And that's apparently pretty rare. Supposedly the previous units would give you two separate connectors, one for the DVD output and one for the DVD play or the VHS playback as well. But anyway, I didn't think I'd be shopping for a VHS deck this year, and stacking a nice 3D Blu-ray player on top of it was actually kind of funny. So the whole setup made me smile, but it worked really well. And for this person, I came across the $25 HDMI switch too. This week that I'll be showing off on the show. I'm going to pick up another one, but it was just an auto-switching, auto-sensing 3-port HDMI switch that worked like a champ and supported 3D, 1080p, all that good stuff. But for those kind of prices, too, if you can't swing the AV receiver with the fancy switching, $25 can get you something like an HDMI switch that will do port sensing, auto-switching like that. And it can take an old TV with one HDMI input or maybe you're running out of ports and just expand the usefulness out of it. And it was awesome. And this person was really happy when it was all said and done.
It's always funny what people are looking for. We had a quick question in the chat room looking for the release date on the Core i7-3820. That's going to sell for $294. It hits the street February 13th.
I think that's my favorite price point. About $300 for a CPU and about $300 for a GPU. And usually right. Have a really nice system.
Tinker Toy Tech, how do I get my Reds to look decent on Philips TVs without replacing the TV? Harsh, but fair. How about this one from Razlak? What's the best entry-level calibrator system for a front projector?
That's a good question. It's tough to do because you're going to have to, the meters you'll be looking at that are relatively affordable will be contact meters that you would normally stick to a screen. So you're going to need a bracket to turn it around and put it in the light path of the projector. Ideally, you'd have a non-contact meter that would take a reading off the screen itself, so you factor in what the screen is doing to change the projected output. Right. That's a good question. I mean, I could suggest a high-end product, but something affordable. You know what? Let me do a little research on that. I want to say that there is got to be something decent out there. I have there's a $300 product I know you can put in the path of light that would probably do pretty damn well, but I haven't actually tried that mode. I've only stuck it to screens, so... and I have it. I have the product in hand, actually. So I'll give it a check, and I'll see what my folks over at SpectraCal have as well. I always check them out first because it's their software that I use the most to drive the hardware that I'm using and for collecting the data and making my life a little easier. So, and they support all the meters out there. So if there's a meter that does this or anybody has one that they recommend, shoot it my way because I'm using a fairly high-end non-contact meter right now. That's great, but most people don't want to spend, you know, a heavy four-digit sum on a meter you might not use very much, or it won't pay for itself in the long run, at least. So,
what's your favorite $700-$800 HDTV right now?
Ooh, tough. man, that's another good one. I always go to the, if I'm in that price range, I like what LG does just because they have some great LCD designs where you can choose between if you need integrated wireless or not. They have good selection of screen sizes. Usually you're talking something in the, probably the 42 to maybe, I don't think you can find a 55 inch that big, but maybe a 47 in that price range. They also incorporate a nice setup feature. LG has their Picture Wizard 2 functionality. A lot of TVs provide built-in calibration tools, but LG actually makes a nice menu-based system that's easy to use, and you don't have to be very technical to figure it out.
Right.
And it also provides, well, if you're going to get one that's net-enabled, you're going to have all your cool apps built right in as well. So, and they generally have good performance. overall. They're always my standby brand. Vizio too. Most Vizio panels are actually using LG glass, so it's hard to really point at them and say, oh, you know, off brand. I don't know about that, but
yeah, I wouldn't call LG, Vizio, or Samsung an off brand.
No, they're all top. You know, they're all right up there. And what else would I shove up in there? I don't know if Sony's got anything in the low price point right there, but I'd stick with those two. And also check out your local, if you're a Costco member or your Sam's Club or your big box subscription stores, check out deals there. I'm actually about to pull the trigger on a 60-inch LCD for my mom, who is replacing an old rear projection TV. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at another product from Samsung that was maybe $1,000 more, and then I really thought, is my mom going to see $1,000 difference in this screen compared to something from, say, Sharp that on sale right now I can get for $1,000 less? So for that, I'm pretty excited, actually, to get that set up for. it's until this Saturday, actually. Costco has a 60-inch, 240-hertz LCD from Sharp, edge-lit, built-in Wi-Fi, apps and stuff for, like, $1,400 delivered. And I'm like, okay, I'm on that.
Do you like the Huey Pro for DIY calibration?
I've never used that one, but it's popular and it's out there. The only thing to see is the software being updated? Is the product itself still being supported? Because you don't want to buy a colorimeter or any kind of meter that's been sitting around for a long time. You want to make sure that it has been verified recently to be fairly accurate or reasonably accurate. There's also an open source colorimeter that was out there, and I have to look that up real quick. Somebody was putting together a project. It was like a kit project, and I believe it was out of England. Hmm. And now I'm just interested, but it was affordable. I want to say it was like $60 to $80 for a good meter. It was based on spectroradiometer. So you're actually doing a measurement of the spectral energy of the light rather than, say, a filter-based method where you're using color filters and then saying how much red, blue, and green is in there. This actually looks at the actual spectral frequencies of the light, what light is composed of. And then it uses the formulas to then figure out how much or where the color points are actually hitting on the chart. It's a more accurate way of doing it. Those tend to be more expensive devices, but now I've got to quickly search for what that was. Let me just try open source colorimeter.
Let me fire up one more question while you're in there. Nick wants to water cool. He says, hey guys, I'm specking out a new system. I wanted to venture into the world of water cooling. Do you have any particular brands that you favor and or know any good places to go to look for parts? Unfortunately, Newegg doesn't really have a large selection. Keep up the great show. Thank you, Nick. And thank you, Nick. FrozenCPU.com is an amazing website. If you're into air cooling or liquid cooling, they have a huge liquid cooling section inside of there. If you've never liquid cooled before, it's really good to just take a deep breath and look around, because when you start doing DIY liquid cooling, it's really amazing. Kyle over at Hard OCP, I think every computer in his office and probably his house has liquid cooling on it, and it's amazing because it can be super quiet. It can do super amazing things when you're overclocking, just in terms of pulling heat away from the CPU, the GPU, and other components in your system. But you need to spend the time to do it right, which means you need to do plumbing. So you have, you're laughing, right? But you know, you remember the monster I made with, I found a radiator that was the size of my case out of, I think, like a Dodge minivan with electric fan. And I figured out at 12 volts, the fan would like literally want to suck the computer off the table like the propeller on an airplane. At 5 volts, it was quiet. You couldn't actually hear it, and there'd be a little trickling waterfall as the pump put it in. But if you're doing DIY liquid cooling, first you need a water block that goes on your CPU. You need tubing between the water block and your radiator, a fan on the radiator. Potentially, although most people don't really need it, you might want to do a reservoir. I think between a decent-sized radiator and the tubing, you'll have enough cooling in there. And you'll basically need water, it's some kind of treated water inside of that, running the whole mess. You'll have to plumb it inside of your system. You'll have to make sure you don't get any moisture inside your system before you turn on the motherboard for the first time. Having seen someone actually accidentally flick a bunch of water on their motherboard while plumbing a system and then turn around and immediately fry their motherboard. But it takes time. It can be a little scary, but once you've done it, it works phenomenally well for cooling. That said, air coolers have gotten so cheap and so good, you can get relatively silent air coolers for like under $50. So, you know, if you're doing this because you want to, I really suggest you check out some of the new sort of integrated units that are out, sort of sealed units. Corsair's Hydro series, they've been going at it gangbusters. The H100, the H40, the H60, the H70, the H80. They kind of get more and more intense. But basically, it's like the H80s, like AMD, AM2, AMD, A3, LG 1155, 1156, 1366. Basically, you know, as the numbers get higher up to a point, the coolers get bigger. For example, the Hydro Series H100 Extreme Performance Liquid CPU cooler is a 240-millimeter radiator, sporting 220-millimeter fans. But it's kind of like water cooling. The revival of water cooling in some ways is centered around Corsair's Hydro and then also Antec's Cooler Series, and then Thermaltec still doing some stuff. Zalman has an insane, if you want to spend a lot of money, they have a huge, I think you can still buy their Resurator, which is out there somewhere. But Corsair is a good place to start if you want to sort of see what it's like without, you know, if you don't want to, it's basically without cutting that tubing, which is going to take a lot of work with an X-Acto knife or a pair of lopping shears. You're not going to leak any water out of that thing, which can be really reassuring when you're doing water cooling for the first time. So check out Corsair's Hydro Series, and check out Frozen CPU as a good place to buy water cooling gear.
Almost went with the Hydro Series for my buddy's new i7 2600K box we put together. We were overclocking. When we overclocked that, it was pretty amazing the amount of heat. We're using a Cooler Master Hyper 212. $25 heatsink. Awesome, actually, for what it is, for that price. But the amount, we had a great case design to, what is it, a Silverstone case that we're using for a mini ITX motherboard, not a full-size motherboard. But this box, when we were pushing it over, we were getting into like 4.5 gigahertz, and the heat flying out of the back of this system was pretty impressive. So that's one of the nice things about liquid cooling, is that you can basically trap all of that within the fluid itself and basically help manage it, rather than having all that heat just escaping into the case and then having to deal with fans pushing air through and ensuring that your dust isn't building up and that all of your filters are clean. And you still have to deal with the radiator keeping it clean, but it's it's a little more compact and a little nicer. And if you're going to be pushing your overclocking, liquid cooling is a great way to go. If you're not going to be overclocking, then I'd say go for a standard heatsink and try to use the motherboard features to run all your fans as slow as possible to minimize things like dust and just crud building up inside the case. That also just comes down to, too, how you set up a box if you're building it yourself, too. Things like positive pressure, so you don't have basically air being sucked in through all the nooks and cracks in the case, pulling dust in where you don't want it. And it's just a... That, to me, is one of the funnest parts about building a system, is just ensuring that over the long run, it's going to function the way you want it to.
Austin, thinking about monitor upgrades, says, "Hey, guys, for the past couple of days, been trying to figure out what monitor to get. I could use some input. I'd like to get a nice one for gaming, somewhere between 24 and 27 inches, but I'm not sure if I should go with a 120-inch monitor for smoother 2D gaming. I don't care about the 3D. It gives me a headache. Or should I go with a 24 or 27-inch screen with a higher resolution than the standard 1080p? I'm going to be playing a lot of different games, Battlefield 3, Guild Wars 2, whenever that gets released, Saints Row, Skyrim. Price is flexible. I was thinking under $900. I have a good system, an i7-920, 26950 GPUs and Crossfire, and 6 gigabytes of RAM. Thanks,
Austin." Thanks, system.
I would say get a 20, like the higher resolution 27-inch monitor.
Yeah, that'd be nice. I mean, but you're talking, well, at least the one I was shopping for new monitors, I wanted like the 30-inch monitor for 2560 by 1600, 1610. Just an awesome display. But those are around, they started around $700, $800 and go up.
Well, Dell UltraSharp U2711, it's a 27-inch WQHD, which is the 2560 by 1440. That's $850.
And then if you can 16 by 10 or 16 by 9.
No. That's 2560 by 1440.
Yeah.
I would take that over a 1080p.
That's 16
monitor.
By 9, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that is. That's a decent monitor, but for the same, for about $300 a pop, I ended up getting two 24-inch monitors with 19 by 12, and I have those side by side now. So it was a balance. Whether you want one giant monitor, which that looks beautiful, no doubt, but that can blow your budget. And I'll be honest, having twin displays, I am I'll never go back to a single display again. And I'm not sure why I waited this long for my workstation at home to have at least two displays running just for productivity. But it was also just cost effective that once you go above, say, 24 inches, the prices start climbing on monitors. And the whole 120 hertz versus not, it'd be nice to have 120 hertz for 2D gaming.
Right.
I actually have not tried that yet, and that would be kind of nice just to see how that looks. Last time I was gaming at 120 hertz was on a CRT, and that was a long time ago. But I would just recommend it. The bigger the monitor, especially nowadays, you just want more pixels on that screen because right. you want a more seamless-looking picture. The monitor I replaced was with my new monitor was a 22-inch 16 by 10 with 1680 by 1050. I believe is the resolution. Just the bumping the resolution up as far as dots per inch on my new monitors is so noticeable. And the contrast performance is so much better than my previous monitor. I'm just I'm in love with it. So it's a tough call. I mean, I see the desire to have one big monitor. Every time I go over to Lloyd Case's house for his Friday night follies, we do a LAN gaming session. He's got this wonderful LAN room in his basement. Right. He has mostly 27 and 30-inch monitors on all the computers in the room, and it's awesome. I have no doubt. But then again, I'm just like, what is the budget for that computer? And if you have it, do it. But, you know, if not, consider 224s.
Lloyd's made the ultimate commitment to the gaming. I mean, that's his thing. He's not a golfer. He doesn't have a membership at a country club. He doesn't have a ski house. He has
a Friday night LAN party that kicks major booty.
Yes, he does.
Oh, I have to get down there more often. I miss you, Lloyd.
Ben says he wants help cracking open an external hard drive. Says, hey, guys, I built a new desktop recently, and I have a two terabyte Western Digital external non-portable hard drive. As far as I know, it has no fancy bells or whistles, just a USB 2.0 port. I was wondering if I cracked open the case, which definitely needs to be cracked, if I would have a perfectly usable 2 terabyte drive to put in the tower. Thanks, Ben. You should. I've cracked open a couple of the Western Digital hard drives. They're kind of like those kids puzzles you get that are made out of horseshoes and steel rings. They're really bizarre the way they're put together, designed to snap together out of a bunch of different plastic elements with an incredibly tiny logic board. And the logic board mounts into like one half of the case, and the LCDs are on the logic board, and they use like little clear plastic light pipes to bring those around to the side of the drive so you can see them, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, there's a 2 terabyte drive should work just fine with your system. You basically have to go into the drive manager and make sure it's showing up properly. But, you know, technically, there is a perfectly functional drive inside of that case. Rarely I've heard of drives not working outside of the case because of something really peculiar they did. But the last couple I've cracked open have worked just fine plugged into a system.
Nice. Oh, I found that open source color meter, by the way. Color management hardware. It's called Color Hug, H-U-G. That's at Hug or Husky, H-U-G-H-S-K-I.com. It's looking pretty cool. And it's, what are they charging for it? 60 pounds. I'm not sure what that converts to off the top of my head. Looks like probably $100 maybe.
Yeah. That's a good deal.
So still, compared to other devices like that one, it's, that's a damn good price actually. So that's actually, I've been meaning to get that and check that out just because, for the money, that seems like a pretty good deal. And that would be good for doing things like measuring color in particular, measuring grayscale. Maybe not so much for doing a contrast analysis where if you have to measure something really, really dark, that might not be the best tool for that. That's where you pay the most money for these devices is something that can measure accurately in very, very dim output. Like you're trying to measure a 1% or 2% gray.
Right.
Don't expect something like this to do that. But when you're measuring 75%, 100% color, or even a standard grayscale from like 20 to 100%, something like this should be pretty awesome.
There you have it.
Yeah.
One
Get
last
your color on.
One last thing before we go, either Pedro or Pete. I'm not sure because the address was one, the signature was the other. But Pedro writes in. I heard Patrick comment about how he prefers to have things wired. Mr. Heron's on that team too. Pete built his home office with 3 separate circuits, 220 amps for both sides of the office, and a 15 amps for the lighting. Yes. My electrician would like you. Wired each side with Cat 6 cabling along with the rest of the house. Love the show. And he actually sent us some pictures of him getting his computing and his Cat 6 on with absolutely no power or packet interruptions. And yeah, I think I should have, if I'd been a little bit smarter, I would have had the electrician pull Cat 6 when he pulled the electrical in the house. Although the nice thing about having a flat single-story house with an open attic and an open crawl space is I can get my Cat 6 cabling on whenever I'm ready. That dude has a lot of speakers under four monitors with two systems and an iPad and more speakers down by the keyboard.
The systems look like the support for the desk.
I think they are. I also like the fact that he still has an old school paper tape calculator on the right side.
That's awesome. That's just that sound effect. You just throw that down and say, oh, I'm working on my taxes.
So
nice. Oh,
Cat 6 is not dead, Adama. And if it is dead, I'm talking to the chat room right now. I want to know what your substitution for Cat 6 is.
You're just using that for, is it better in-wall rating? Is that the difference between Cat 6 and 5?
Cat 6 is, well, yeah. Cat 6 should take you beyond gigabit Ethernet. A Gizmo says, skip the Cat 6 and go fiber, which is great. If I had like $15,000 to install the various bits and sundry pieces of equipment to connect the fiber to something I could actually use. Adama, you mean Cat 6A, which is not Cat 6. Oh,
I just want...
Adama on picking nits.
Give me a conduit. I just want conduit in a house, especially if you're remodeling. Put the damn tubing in there. And then I can leave a miles of my Cat 5 cable. I just leave a line in there, not even connected, so I can pull the next cable, whatever that will be.
Yeah, that would be nice. But yeah, 10 gigabits at least on Cat 6, although you're not going to actually find 10 gigabit. And yes, as NGT Flyer points out, honestly, 5e works fine for all but the very longest gigabit runs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Copper. Give me a piece of copper.
I also would like to point out that...
I can terminate myself.
Well, no, Adama also says Cat 5e goes past gigabit Ethernet 2 and all the reasons people used to justify wasting money on Cat 6 back in the day turned out to not be true. He's run Cat 5e 200 meters at gigabit Ethernet levels. And yes. Ooh. And if you're looking for a Cat 6 bulk cable deal, firefold.com.
Telling you, that you can use those balans too and
Cat 6.
For doing HDMI over Ethernet if you need to.
Oh, yeah.
It's cheaper than a long run of HDMI in some cases. Very long.
Yeah, well, when I pop open the rest of the walls in the house, maybe I'll start running Ethernet in them. Ladies and gentlemen.
I picked up a $25 HDMI, or 25-foot HDMI cable for $20.
Right.
You know what? It worked just fine. So, and we're running 3D, 1080p, everything over it. And so don't fear that kind of a run. Now, if you're talking 40 feet or longer, that's a different story, but...
There you have it. Mr. Heron, what's coming up on Heron Fidelity in the near future? What's next HDTV?
You know what? I've got a brand new calibration disc from Walt Disney, or Disney in general, called Wow, World of Wonder, I believe. And it is surprisingly good. I'm actually enjoying it. They actually have a section where Goofy talks about home theater. Well, he doesn't really talk much, but the narrator does the talking. But I was a little suspect about how good a Disney calibration disc could be, but this one's actually pretty decent, and it includes some good content. I got a two-disc set that it came with, and it includes also some pretty beautiful content to look at and show off your system after you're done checking it and verifying it. And it also it's well put together, and if you're just curious about home theater and stuff, it's something we'll show off and take a look at and see what you guys think. And what else am I looking at, too? Oh, like I said, I got a pile of HDMI switches going through. What else? Some new TVs are coming in. Ooh, wireless HDMI. Two products. One in hand right now from the good folks at I want to say it's DVDO, the Silicon Image folks. They sent me their latest HDMI wireless kit. And I've got one coming from Belkin, too, that I just put in the request for that should be here in the next couple of days. So it looks like all these wireless HDMI kits that are affordable now.
Uh-huh.
Looks like they're finally getting it together and starting to ship these products. So there should be a minor flood of these types of devices happening appearing in the stores in the next month or two. So
there you have it.
Yeah. Got lots of cool stuff coming up. And all the new TVs are starting to roll out now. The early models, at least for this year. So hopefully we'll get some of those in. We will be getting some of those in. Oh, Pico projectors. Jeez, got two of those coming in as well. Small projectors are arriving. We'll be looking at some good home theater stuff. I'm going to go beg the folks at JVC for one of those eShift 4K projectors, see if they can loan me their beautiful $8,000 or $12,000 model, too. And we can make it rule. And there's always more stuff on the horizon, I'm sure.
One last thing before we go. Jake Ryan, 1974, in the chat room says, wireless HDMI has got to give you cancer. No, but staying out in the sun too long definitely can. That's it for Twitch this week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, I'm Robert Aaron.
We'll see you next time on Twitch. Or on Taxzilla.
Too. Or HD
Nation. Or HD Nation. We're always there. Or HeronFidelity.com.
Find me. And I forgive my website's current condition. It's got some broken images and stuff, and I'm moving things around and finding a new host right now.
Ooh,
actually.
A new host. Yeah, and watch the
my website badly. Badly. Find the time. Do it.
Oh, man. And I will point out to Jake Ryan, 1974, I'm much more afraid of microwaves than I am of wireless HDMI.